Afternoon, sir.
Afternoon, Judge.
Mr. Duvall, we're ready to hear your argument. Would you care to reserve any of your time for rebuttal?
I'll reserve 5 minutes.
All right. I'm glad to hear when you're ready.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Todd Duvall. I'm representing James Edward Mercer in the case of Mercer versus Commonwealth. This is a very narrow issue case in connection with Brady and its progeny. The facts that are, I believe...
Well, let me interrupt you if I can, because I think we can cut to the chase
please.
Here. Brady, I'm curious as to how this is a Brady violation. If I understand the timeline correctly, the Commonwealth discovered that, or if you impute knowledge to the Commonwealth attorney as to the problem with this scientist, it was discovered after trial but before sentencing. That's when the individual was terminated, correct?
Yes, sir.
So Brady is a multi-part test, and it seems to me, and I guess it may be a distinction without much of a difference, but I think the standards are slightly different as to whether this is arguably a Brady violation or after discovered evidence, because Brady requires that there be that the information be suppressed, and you seem to assume that it was. I'm not sure. It wasn't provided in time for trial, but it wasn't known prior to trial by anyone. So how do you meet the first prong of Brady with the suppression? And before you even answer that, let me go on to the next one, which is it even exculpatory in the first place? Because the definition of exculpatory evidence, as I understand it, is evidence which tends to demonstrate actual innocence, evidence which would tend to reduce the penalty, or evidence that impeaches a witness on a material fact. And in this case, as I understand, the individual was terminated for what amounts to false negative as opposed to false positive scientific analyses. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So how is that information, it seems to me that actually benefits the accused. If you have a scientist who is saying, these aren't drugs when in fact they are, these aren't controlled substances when in fact they are, which is what she was terminated for. There was apparently no instance known in the record of any circumstance where a defendant was falsely accused because a scientist said, this is a controlled substance, when in fact it was not. So how do you get to how do we deal with those two parts of Brady before you even get to prejudice?
Well, the way that I see it and the way it came out, hopefully, in my brief, is that the first prong is actually that the evidence is favorable to the defendant, okay? And favorable in this case is the impeachment issue. It's certainly not exculpatory.
How does it impeach this witness on any material fact?
Well, when we're offered the opportunity to bring in the scientist, in each case, Melendez Diaz's decision, when we're allowed to do that, the reason for that is because that certificate, when admitted, is testimonial and evidence pursuant to that.
Get that.
To that case. And the reason that we're bringing in or offered the opportunity to bring in the forensic scientist is to cross-examine them.
I understand that, but that's a it seems to me there's a difference between a tactical decision that would have been made differently had you had the information at the time versus the information actually being exculpatory in the sense that it's impeachment. As I understand it, the work of the scientist in this particular case was reviewed by another scientist after the individual was terminated, and there were no issues regarding the analysis in this particular case. So to the extent that there's impeachment material here at all, it's as to what was done in other unrelated cases, and they involve false negatives as opposed to false positives. So again, how is any of that favorable to the accused if it were to come in, as opposed to the tactical decision of whether to demand the witness's presence or not? It seems to me those are two different things analytically under Brady.
Well, Judge, I think, again, realistically, when you've got a forensic scientist who has been fired for cause, whether that cause be false positives or false negatives, you certainly cast light in a negative light on the findings represented by
the certificates.
I'm
not sure I agree with that. I mean, clearly, certainly in this case, if this individual had been terminated because they falsely identified the substance in play in this particular case, I would agree with you 100%. But the fact that they either didn't follow procedures or falsely identified or falsely determined controlled substances not to be controlled substances, I don't see how that fact is impeachment as to this case. It wouldn't be admissible under any theory I'm aware of.
Well, Judge, I think if you look at the facts in this case, it comes back to your question. But the facts in this case were that the Commonwealth had no good audio. It was some you could hear, but very little. They had no good video. They had no police officer who observed any criminal activity whatsoever. And their CI had been convicted of 11 or 12 misdemeanors and felonies involving lying, cheating, stealing, and drugs. So the only solid part of the Commonwealth's case was the certificate. That was the only good part of their case.
Well, obviously, if it's not drugs, or if there's some doubt, reasonable doubt, that we're talking about controlled substances, your client's entitled to an acquittal as a matter of law. However, the issue of credibility of the witness, it seems to me, had she been present, you would not have been permitted to ask about analyses made in other not relevant cases.
I don't think I would have been able to ask that question.
So, you know, if it wouldn't have been admissible, how would you ever demonstrate the prejudice?
Well, by asking her, and again, and I raised this point when I was questioned closely at the preliminary level, is, you know, if my client would have been aware that there was a potential issue with these certificates of analysis, he might have elected to take a jury as opposed to a bench trial.
Again, those are tactical decisions that were made, but they're not part of the Brady analysis, as far as I understand Brady.
Well, the key to Brady, which is that is the reasonable probability standard. That's the materiality portion that finally has come down through the several, like I say, follow-up cases to Brady. And reasonable probability, what it is would there have been a reasonable probability, had the defendant had this evidence available to him, would there have been a reasonable probability that the outcome of the trial would have been different?
And here the trial judge, who was the fact finder, said no.
Well, he did. He made a specific ruling on that, and I believe that was a legal ruling, which allows you all to review it de novo to insert your own analysis into that.
The trial occurred on June 18th.
Yes, sir.
She wasn't terminated until August 11th.
My sentencing hearing was on September 17th, so it was still before the court.
Right. But
and Mr.
That
Spencer,
point, it's too late to go back and do a jury trial. I mean, you can
ask for a new trial.
You could.
Well, that's why I question whether this is Brady versus after-discovered evidence, because clearly it seems to me it fits more the definition of after-discovered evidence, which does have some similar prongs that have to be established. But one is, could you have found out through due diligence? I think we can give you that one. I don't see how you could have. You know, would the result have been different? That's another part of it, which is similar to what we have with Brady. But here, the trial court, having heard this evidence, and of course having heard the trial and made his own credibility determination, because he was also the fact finder, said, no, you know, it wouldn't have made a difference. So while you're correct, it seems to me that is maybe at best a mixed question of law and fact, because he's saying, I was also the fact finder, and had this information been available at the time, I still would have credited the analysis in this case, and therefore it was a controlled substance, and therefore I'm not changing the verdict.
I understand that, and the way that I believe it is, at least, is when we put the motion for a new trial before the court, after I discovered about the material that I consider to be Brady, the court had the opportunity to review my motion, had the opportunity to review the Commonwealth's response to it, and the court made a ruling, but that was a legal ruling. So I don't believe that this...
Well, how is it suppressed? Let's start there. What do you assert the Commonwealth did to suppress this?
The Commonwealth suppressed the knowledge that was within the scope of its ability to know.
Which looks like they notified you as soon as they were aware of it.
Oh, he never notified me. He never notified. That's a different Commonwealth's attorney that I got the letter from. That's how I found out about it.
You found out about it a day later, but from a different Commonwealth's attorney.
Different Commonwealth's
from
attorney.
From King William.
From King William, Matt Kite. And Mr. Kite properly notified everybody that practiced before him in his jurisdiction and handles these kind of cases. Nancy Peace has been fired for cause. I don't think she did any false positives, but she was fired for cause. Thought you ought to know that. That's Brady. And that's why Mr. Kite took that step. And that Mr. Spencer never notified me. Mr. Spencer, for the first time, told me that he found out about it in August, which was well before the sentencing. But in his analysis, he says that the DFS was aware of it as far back as May. And the DFS, that's before my trial. And the DFS is an arm of the Commonwealth. It's everybody's state lab.
But even assuming that argument is preserved for appeal, and really didn't make that argument below, I don't believe, but let's assume for my sake of my question it's preserved. Even if the third incident happened in May, I gather, how is DFS before they deal with personnel issues, or that every time someone makes a mistake, they have to alert every counsel where, you know, that DFS, you know, analyst has done a certificate in their case at any point, if they've ever missed one or two?
Well, Judge, I would suggest that the DFS...
I want you to answer Judge Beal's question, but I just want to point out you're in the rebuttal time, so go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'll answer the question. I would suggest that in every case where they have an issue of firing for cause, dismissal for cause, in a position where this person who is dismissed is actually signing and doing the analysis that produces the certificate, which is testimonial in nature, they have an obligation not to contact me. They don't need to call me, but they do need to contact every Commonwealth's attorney to whom those certificates have gone out, because that Commonwealth's attorney then has a Brady issue.
Even if they miss one, despite the peer review?
If they don't fire him, I don't think they have to call anybody.
What about if they fire him for being late for work or, you know, something like that? I mean, is every firing offense that requires...
If they fire him for, you know, showing up drinking, maybe, but for being late for work, excessive absences, no, because that doesn't... You know, how am I going to impeach her with that? You know, you were fired, right? Well, yeah, I was late for work. In this case, I've got real impeachment because you were fired, right? And you were fired for cause, right? Because you didn't do your certificates correctly, right? That's impeachment. Thank you.
All right, Mr. Stoller.
Good afternoon. May it please the Court. Rick Stoller on behalf of the Commonwealth.
First, I want to note, Your Honor, that I think you may have misspoke earlier, or just want to correct the record.
I do it all the time, so go ahead.
The drugs in this instance here were not retested.
I thought they were reviewed by another, not retested, but peer-reviewed by another.
They were peer-reviewed, yes.
I thought that's what I was saying.
I'm sorry. If I misunderstood, I apologize. Just
was the peer review something that was inherent in the original certificate of analysis?
Yes.
That is, they weren't peer-reviewed after this to ensure the accuracy.
Correct. And that's how it was. They found out that this piece was made a mistake was because of this peer review process, which they used to make sure all the certificates that come out of their office are accurate and correct. And DFS, when they did this, they also notified that there's 35 outstanding cases that had not yet gone to trial. All the evidence in those cases was retested. In each instance, turned out to be exactly what Ms. Pisa said it was.
Would you agree, though, there's nothing in this record that suggests she ever made any false positive?
Correct.
Analysis.
There is no indication that she said something was a drug, which was not.
Does that make a difference?
I think it does make a difference, and it also makes a difference that DFS themselves say nothing came out of her office incorrect, ever. Meaning that the mistakes Ms. Peace made in the past, the certificate that went out was accurate and correct. That's how they knew she made a mistake, because of the peer review process they have.
Then why retest the other items for which?
Because Ms. Peace would not be available to testify because she'd been fired. So they had to have it retested in order to have
a witness in case somebody wanted.
In case somebody wanted a witness to testify, they'd have to have somebody that was currently employed by DFS to come in to testify. It wasn't because they believed anything was wrong, it was more just provided witnesses. But it's important to note that everything that was retested was exactly as Ms. Peace said it was. Nothing came out wrong in the stuff that was still pending that was retested.
Judge Humphreys asked you, would it make any difference if it was false positive versus false negatives in general? I guess my follow-up to that is, if you're looking to impeach somebody, whether it's before a judge or a jury, isn't the broader issue, if you're a poor chemist, regardless of how you made the mistake in those occasions that led up to your firing for cause, if you're a poor chemist, you're capable of making the mistake the other way as well?
I mean, I think, yeah, I don't think it ultimately makes a difference either way, but I think there's impeachment value arguably on both ways. If the person makes a mistake, they make a mistake, and a fact finder might have a right to know that this person has made mistakes before. But they also have the right to say, look, this certificate is not wrong. There's no chance of it being wrong because of the peer review process the DFS puts in place. Whether it's a false positive or a false negative, it's going to get caught. They caught it before, they're going to catch it again. So ultimately, at the end of the day, there is no credibility issue regarding the chemist because there's no evidence to suggest the certificate itself is wrong or materially incorrect.
Well, let me follow up on Judge Atlee's question. I understand a prosecutor's duty under Brady to be to disclose whether or not the evidence might ultimately be admissible, but whether or not the evidence might ultimately be admissible is a factor in the prejudice analysis, part of the analysis, because you have to determine if the result would be different. If the evidence would never come into evidence, then the result could possibly be different. So given that, where does that leave us in terms of first of all, do we even apply Brady to the situation, or is it, as I suggested, possibly more of an after-discovered evidence situation?
I think it's more of an after-discovered evidence than Brady, because Brady implies pretrial disclosure requirements as opposed to post-trial disclosure. Since the events here that we're talking about didn't occur until several months after trial. But under either scenario, I think regarding prejudice especially, there's nothing here to indicate any undermining the confidence of the verdict. There's nothing to indicate that even if he'd been permitted to answer the question, that would have gone to any materiality to the weight of the certificate itself. And I think anything dealing with other evidence has nothing to do with the issue here regarding the scientist's testimony or... That's what, even if the Commonwealth's case was weak on the other part, that has nothing to do with the analysis of this regarding the certificate. And like the court said, a lot of this, whether the court technician got something wrong in an unrelated case at some time in the past, likely not even going to be admissible. But even if it was, it wasn't going to change anything because there's nothing regarding this certificate being in error. I mean, it's just the way it is, yeah.
I mean, we are human beings and we're fallible, right. And everybody's going to make a mistake at some point. I think the question is that where do you draw the line? And the Brady jurisprudence is frankly kind of vague about all this, but you know, how much is enough to constitute a requirement of notice under Brady versus, oh, they flunked organic chemistry in college or something and now they're employed as a scientist and
right.
Be disclosed?
I mean, I think here it's like if there's anything that would undermine the confidence of the verdict, if there's anything exculpatory, mitigation and sentencing, or might say the guilty of a lesser included, the fact that somebody made a mistake several months earlier in an unrelated case that was caught before anything went out, that doesn't feel like the same type of Brady issue as, well, someone else confessed to the crime we just convicted you of and said they did it alone. One is clearly, yep, that's going to help your case, that's exculpatory, that's admissible, it's relevant, it's material, you need to know that. The other is, it doesn't really change the ballgame at all. It's like unrelated, nothing material happened regarding anything wrong coming out of the lab, which is what the ultimate issue is, the certificate is accurate. So the timing here, it's like, whether the certificate is accurate or not has to do with guilt or innocence, not necessarily sentencing. So here it's more of a pretrial, but it didn't happen until post-trial, so it doesn't really fit in the Brady scheme anyways as far as the notice of when disclosure would be required. Now, would it have been a good idea for him to tell him since he knew? Yes, obviously. That should have happened. It didn't. I don't think it matters ultimately, but a better practice would have been to let everybody know. And I think what DFS was telling the prosecutors was, like, anything that's already finished, we don't need to reopen it. These are 35 that are pending. We're going to get somebody else to retest it so it's going to testify. I think the disclosure thing had a lot to do with the way DFS presented it to the Commonwealth as well. So.
Isn't it an assumption, though, that the certificate is accurate based upon the peer review that's done in this case? Because this sample wasn't retested to determine, yes, this is certainly accurate. We just know that the chemist that signed off on it was fired for cause for getting things wrong.
Right. And part of that analysis, had she been there to testify and this came out, would have been, yes, I've made mistakes. But what all my work is reviewed before it goes out the door. And there's no chance there could have been a mistake that went out the door. That would have been part of it. So whether or not that ultimately counts as impeachment because you got them to admit, yes, I made a mistake once or twice, versus, yes, but this particular certificate, like all the others, are peer-reviewed and tested by other people before it goes out the door, so there's no chance there could have been a mistake. I mean, that's just the way it would have played out. And I don't believe this is a Brady violation. I don't believe there's a disclosure requirement. It would have been better. Cleaner, obviously, had that happened, but... I ask the court to confirm that there's no prejudice or right violation.
Thank you, Mr. Stahl. Mr. Duvall?
Thank you, Judge.
Our timer up here isn't working, so I'm not quite sure how much time you have left. But
it won't take long. First of all, the Smith versus Cain case that I cited in my brief, which is the United States Supreme Court case out of 2011, plays on what I, the point I was trying to make is, in that case, the Commonwealth had nothing else but an eyewitness who claimed to see the defendant commit the act. With the case being weak, that's one of the things the Supreme Court went into, is they said, well, look, you know, you've got to look at what else was going on in the case, because the standard isn't a different verdict. The standard is, would the proceedings had a different outcome? And the whole outcome that the Supreme Court's trying to guarantee under Brady is that people, judicial system, the citizens, that people have confidence in the verdict. And so the question as to whether or not that certificate was, whether she made good mistakes for the defense or bad mistakes, is irrelevant. The question is,
I think the question is whether she made a mistake in this case, because that's what makes it relevant and material. If you make a mistake in another case, that doesn't necessarily affect the outcome of every other case that individual is ever involved with.
Well, I think that what Smith, Cain, Bagley, all these courts are getting at is that even if this evidence, if you find it to be material, because I believe that is up to you because this is a de novo review, if you find that evidence to be material, does it undermine the case if the finder of fact was not even allowed to consider the impeachment evidence? That's the gravamen, I believe, of this. And I wasn't even offered an opportunity to make this argument. And even if it would have gone exactly as the court has suggested, and it would have bolstered the Commonwealth's case because they come in and say, oh, we got multi-layer peer review. And even if it would have, the point is, did the finder of fact get an opportunity to consider that?
Well, I know hypothetically, we have cases that say this pretty much. Hypothetically, if this had been known before trial, and if it had been suppressed deliberately by the prosecutor, and then it came out before the matter came up to us on appeal, the analysis would be whether the result would have been different. And had it come out at a time when the fact finder, and I think we have a case right on point, where the fact finder in effect said it wouldn't have made any difference at all. And then, you know, when you have the benefit of that, we don't have that in jury trials, we do have it in bench trials quite often. But when you have that, that kind of makes our job pretty easy because, in effect, what that means is, yes, there was a Brady violation. Yes, there were a lot of things that were done wrong. But in the final analysis, it wouldn't have made any difference. So it's really not a harmless error analysis, but you get to the same place because, yeah, it was all handled badly. And I think that's Mr. Stallard's basic argument. There were some things that should have been done differently here. But in the final analysis, it would have made no difference at all because none of this would have been admissible.
Well, I'm out of time.
You can answer my question.
Thank you. What I would suggest to the court is that the way that the court should look at the court's ruling, and in our case, obviously, we've got a written order where the court that reviewed my motion and Mr. Spencer's reply brief, he made a written order. So we've got a finding. But I believe that this is, again, a de novo case. I believe you are allowed to substitute your judgment for that trial court's judgment on this issue, because he didn't hear the evidence. This isn't an issue of credibility. All he did was make a legal ruling. And so I believe you are able to substitute your judgment for whether or not it is relevant material under the cases.
Right, thank you, Mr. Duvall. We'll come down.